It's a pleasure to be here. I got here off the plane yesterday, called my wife, told her I was in, and she goes, how is it? And there was about a 25, 30 mile an hour wind blowing, and I go, it's like standing in a blow dryer out here. I forgot how hot it gets out here. It's plenty hot, but we're in an air-conditioned building. And we're going to talk about contempt today. What are we talking about?
My clients are caught completely by surprise. They thought they were getting arrested for shoplifting a can of tuna.
What are you telling me? That they plead not guilty?
No, I'm just trying to explain.
I don't want to hear explanations. The state of Alabama has its procedure. And that procedure at this point in time is to have an arraignment. Are we clear on this?
Yes, but there seems to be a great deal of confusion here.
Mr. Gambini.
See, my clients are...
Mr. Gambini.
Come away.
All I ask from you is a very simple answer to a very simple question. There are only two ways to answer it, guilty or not guilty.
Your Honor, my clients didn't do anything.
Once again, the communication process is broken down. It appears to me that you want to skip the arraignment process, go directly to trial, skip that, and get a dismissal. Well, I'm not about to revamp the entire judicial process just because you find yourself in the unique position of defending clients who say they didn't do it. Now, next words out of your mouth are either going to be guilty or not guilty. I don't want to hear commentary, argument, or opinion. If I hear anything other than guilty or not guilty, you'll be in contempt. I don't even want to hear you clear your throat. I hope I've been clear. Now, how do your clients plead?
I think I get the point.
No, I don't think you do. You're now in contempt of court. Would you like to go for two counts of contempt?
Not guilty.
Thank you. Bail will be set at $200,000.
The problem with playing that clip is now everybody here wants to watch the rest of the movie. They don't want to lose it. Okay, we're going to cover four basic categories, four objectives. One is to define contempt. We're going to classify it as direct or indirect, describe and apply an appropriate sanction to the act, and prepare the documents required to effect the sanction. Now, how many judges have we got here that have been judges over 10 years? 15. A couple over 15. Anybody here found anybody in contempt? One, two, four, five? That's more than I've had in any course I've done so far. Out of the five people who have done it, jurors, defendants, lawyers, defendant, pro se defendant, 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 no lawyers? No lawyers yet. Okay. Surprisingly enough, it is mostly defendants, although I've never had, the most I've had before this in a class, which are bigger, is three. Well, probably a good sign. We don't have that many people being found in contempt. And oddly enough, when you go in to do any legal research and you put contempt cases up, Texas has its share of cases, but if you compare that to New York or California, they've got hundreds of cases on contempt. So as a rule, I think our courts are pretty orderly, but what do we do when we have a problem? Okay. Well, in defining contempt, where's the authority of the court to issue a contempt order? Well, it's found in the government code. That's in your materials. If you go ahead, why don't you go ahead and turn to that? It's on page 7 of the handout. And on page 7, it tells us at the very top there, the court has all the powers needed or necessary for the exercise of its jurisdiction and enforcement of its lawful orders, including the authority to issue writs and orders. And the court shall require proceedings to be conducted with dignity and in an orderly and an orderly and expeditious fashion. Now, the reason I'm looking at this now is, of course, for that guidance, but more importantly, in this particular case, look at the information contained there about religious apparel. anybody had a religious apparel incident in their court? Okay, I haven't had anybody had one yet, but if you've got one, this is the place to go to find out what you've got to do. It's going to happen sooner or later. If somebody's got a piece of religious apparel, that's going to be a problem. There has to be, and it's pretty clear here, there has to be a party that objects to it. Your Honor, I object. This person is wearing this, and I think it's going to be a problem. So you've got to have a party that raises the issue. Then it tells you exactly what you're supposed to do. There has to be an objection, and the judge concludes the wearing of the apparel will interfere with the objecting party's right to a fair hearing, or it has to affect the proper administration of justice, and there are no reasonable alternatives. So there's a checklist there you've got to follow if you've got one of these religious article incidents, and I'm not picking on any religious faith, but if you have one and some party, whether it's the defendant or the prosecutor, says, I've got a problem with this person wearing this particular item, the place you've got to go to find out what to do and not keep yourself out of trouble is right here in the government code. You're probably going to have to hold a little hearing, and you're probably going to have to make some rulings on the record that you've checked off these things and you evaluated the circumstances, and you may have to order that person to remove it if you find that there's going to be a problem with a fair administration of justice, or it's going to affect someone's right to a fair trial, and there's no reasonable alternative. So be aware of that. So the inherent powers of the court are there. So what is contempt? Well, contempt's conduct offensive to the dignified, orderly, and expeditious administration of justice. We talked about the religious apparel exception and what you've got to do if that comes up. It's also conduct in violation of lawful orders. It's a purposeful act of disrespect and an affront to the dignity of the court. The case that's cited there, it's an unpublished case. The cite is still accurate. Ex parte Anam Raposa involves a lawyer making an obscene gesture during while the judge is speaking. He's found in contempt. Comes back, judge puts him in jail. There's a contempt hearing. The court, it's upheld. He goes to jail. We'll talk a little bit more about the procedures when you have a lawyer involved or a court officer a little later on. But this was an act that was disrespectful to the court. The court said, "Yep, that's all in," and upheld the determination for contempt. And I believe it was a 30-day jail sentence. Yes. Contempt happening outside of court. It's a good question, and we're going to cover it. Now, I'm not sure if you're speaking about indirect contempt, which is a violation of a court order, or something that happens outside the court that becomes a direct contempt issue. I think okay, the judge is asking about incidents that happen kind of outside the physical boundaries of the courtroom, or whether that's contempt or not. We're going to talk very specifically about that, and I believe your question will be answered. Okay, we're going to classify it. We know that contempt is something that affronts the court's dignity or affects the fair administration of justice. Now we've got to classify whatever it is we see that's a problem. For example, anybody here ever had somebody come in for a drug paraphernalia case with a T-shirt with a big marijuana leaf on it? Now, or public intoxication, minor in possession of alcohol, and it's got a Budweiser shirt on. I mean, what's going on there? I mean, that person's trying to send a little signal that, hey, I know you got me, but I'm going to show you that I'm in charge. And we just can't allow that. And we shouldn't allow it. And there's a way to treat that, and we're going to talk a little more about it. Anyway, direct contempt involves conduct that occurs in the court's presence, and the conduct requires the court to act instantly to suppress a disturbance or obstruction to the proper conduct of the court's business. That's the ex parte Nabel case. The cite is there. This is one, there's a lot of cases cited here. Of course, I recommend you read all of them, but if you're going to, there's about three or four of them you really must read, and this is one of them, the Nabel case, that's going to talk about not just whether it occurs, but whether you have to do something right away. Now, judge's question back there was about in the court's presence. I'm going to talk a little bit more about what in the court's present means in just a moment. The second category is, well, indirect or constructive contempt involves conduct that occurs outside the presence of the court, or the in-court conduct does not require immediate action to suppress or disturbance or obstruction to the proper conduct of the court's business. Okay, war story. I got this from Judge Whitley, who's the presiding judge in the city of Hearst. I think he may be the longest sitting judge in the state. He's been a judge, I don't know, 40-something years. A guy comes in, wore a case, got a T-shirt on that says, "Don't tell me," and it's got S-H-I. He says, judge tells him, "Look, you've got a case here today, but you can't have that T-shirt in this court. So I'm going to reset your case, and you can come back another time, and we'll talk about how to resolve whatever traffic ticket you have." So what did the judge do? The judge determined that there was a problem. However, the judge also determined that the conduct didn't require something right then and there. In other words, the judge decided, "I'm not going to put you in jail right away for that. I'm going to give you a chance to go get your act together. Come back with a T-shirt with no writing on it. We'll take care of your business." Now, that might have been the end of it, but it wasn't. Of course, when the guy's leaving the court, he decides to mutter some curse word, and the judge at that point said, "That's it. Off you go." At that point, the judge decided, "Well, now I need to do something because you've done a second thing that's shown disrespect to the court." So the judge put him in jail for 3 days. So that's an example of an incident that is disrespectful but may not need something right there and then. Because we're talking about direct contempt. We're talking about putting people in jail right then and there. Okay.
Marshal, this court is not concerned with hearsay evidence. This court requires facts. Defendants, all three, are charged with murder and rustling. Facts. The only matter that concerns this court.
But this court was concerned with justice.
Justice is my province, Marshal. Mine and mine alone. Now, you'll confine yourself to giving direct answers to direct questions or find yourself in contempt of court. Proceed.
One of those boys is 18, the other's only 16.
That cost you $10.
Neither one of them's ever been in trouble with the law.
$20.
If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't
even... $30! One more word, you'll spend 30 days in the hole. Do you have any further questions for this witness?
No more questions, Your Honor.
And you may step down, Marshal.
Anybody seen that one? There you go. Okay, what's going on here? We have a law enforcement officer. The judge has warned him. These are the guidelines. And the person, whoever it is, continues on with whatever they're going to do, and the judge starts to impose sanctions of increasing severity. What are some other examples? Well, refusal to rise on the entrance and exit of the judge. That's the ex parte Krupp's case, another case I recommend you read for a number of reasons. In this case, the judge came in. There were several people who didn't stand. The judge told the bailiff later, "You need to tell them that if they don't do that again, I'm going to hold them in contempt." And in fact, that's what they did. Next time the judge came in, didn't rise. Judge held him in contempt, put him in jail for 30 days, appealed, writ of habeas corpus filed, upheld. There's a very interesting discussion in this case about the whole reason people rise report. There's some very caustic dissensions in this case. A couple of very respected judges filed dissensions about it. One judge in particular states, they didn't rise, but they didn't create a disturbance. The majority says, looks at the whole case. These folks came to court looking to cause a problem. I think that persuaded the court to act on this matter in this case. But you should read this case because the dissents are very interesting. The history and the traditions about rising to court. More importantly, this issue about when is the court in session? When is it in the presence of the court? As we're going to see in the Bell case, which we'll talk about at the bottom here, it's going to become a very important issue. Okay, a disruptive act or event in the courtroom or just outside the courtroom while court's in session. Judge, your question is going to be answered in that case, ex parte Aldridge. In this case, the altercation occurred just outside the court. Judge held him in direct contempt. Court of Appeal says it's that's okay. Once again, in that case, there are some dissents that are probably worth reading. I think some of the defending judges have a little problem with, wait a minute. In the court's presence means the judge is a witness to what happened. How can the judge be a witness if it happened outside the judge's presence? I can't tell you whether, what you should do. I just know this is what the law is, and the law says that if a disturbance happens just outside the court while court's in session, that's in the ballpark. An altercation at the court door between the defendant and the bailiff. That's in. That's right there in front. Although, once again, in this case, there are some dissents in ex parte Daniel because One of the judges points out, looks at the hearing record, and says the judge had to ask a few questions about what happened. So the dissenting judge is asking, well, if the judge had to ask what happened, why is it an indirect attempt? That means it didn't occur in the judge's presence, and then why is it direct? There's going to be, the cases fall down clearly on who gets the benefit of the doubt. The judge. Most of the cases will rule, the judge feels it's a problem, that we're going to go with it. However, if you're going to read one case, and we've actually included this in your materials, you've got to read In re Bell. Now, that In re Bell case, judicial disciplinary proceeding, it's in your materials. There are some very interesting questions and discussions, and the court picks apart the incident and discusses the law in a very complete fashion. In essence, what happens is judge comes to court about an hour and a half late after lunch. There are a bunch of people in court. Some have lawyers talking to prosecutors. And one of the guys there has a kid in college. The judge walks in, says something, walks out in the hallway. This fellow gets out, goes in the hallway, and says, you know, Judge, I just don't think it's right for you to keep us waiting. We have places to be. And the judge's response is, well, I'm going to show you how long you keep you here. And she goes and holds him in direct contempt, puts him in jail. Court of Appeals, I think the habeas court, directs him to be released. He's released. The judge signs another contempt order, puts him back. It's just a disaster. If you want to find out how to stay out of trouble, you've got to go here. Now, interesting issues that arise in this case that the judge back there brought up is, look, when's court in session? Was court ever called to session? Is a statement to the judge that offends the judge's sensibilities automatically something that's contrary to the proper administration of justice or disrespectful to the court? Court makes it pretty clear in this discussion that saying something like that to a judge outside the court when it's unclear if court is even in session or not, that's probably not going to be contempt. So, what are some lessons we can learn from that? Okay, when the judge enters and the court bailiff says all rise, that's a pretty one of the things they talk about this all rise thing is we're now focusing everyone's attention on the fact the court is now in session. We are now going to do the court's business, and it's time to pay attention to what's going on over here and not whatever you're doing sitting around chatting with over there. So, if you don't have some event that lets kind of everybody know, hey, court's in session right now, you may have a problem later on if some incident occurs with determining whether or not it's contempt because, well, is court in session or not? It should be pretty clear. If you don't have a procedure like that, probably time to go and revisit it. I'm not saying it's going to be a problem, but you know, it ought to be pretty clear to everybody in court when court starts, so that if you have to do something to keep order, there's no question about your authority to do so. So In re Bell, very interesting case. I strongly suggest you read that. It's a roadmap of what not to do. Stay out of trouble. Stay within the case law. It's usually my advice. Stay on safe ground. Okay, indirect contempt is conduct that occurs outside the presence of the court, or the in-court conduct does not require immediate action to suppress a disturbance or obstruction to the proper conduct of the court's business. We talked a little bit about when something happens in the court, you don't have to do anything right then and there. And I don't think we'll have any question on conduct that occurs outside the court, indirect contempt. In other words, violation of a court order. You've told the defendant to do something, they don't do it. How often does that happen, by the way? Anybody have that happen? I mean, everybody has that happen. All right.
What does that mean? Them? Toto didn't mean to. He didn't know he was doing anything wrong. I'm the one that ought to be punished. I let him go in their garden. You can send me to bed without supper.
If you don't hand over that dog, I'll bring the damn suit and take your whole farm. There's a law protecting folks against dogs that bite. How would it be if she keeps him tied up? He's really gentle. With gentle people, that is.
Well, that's for the sheriff to decide. Here's his order. Well, I'm here to take it. Unless you want to go against the law.
We can't go against the law, Dorothy. I'm afraid poor Toto will have to go.
Now you're seeing reason. Here's what I'm taking him in. So he can't attack me again.
Oh, no, no, I won't let you take him. You go away. Oh, I'll bite you myself.
Dorothy.
You wicked old witch. Uncle Henry, Annie M., don't let him take Toto. Oh, don't let him take him,
enough.
Please.
Let me have
him.
Put him in the basket, Henry.
I see. No. Oh, Doc. I got you back. You came back. Oh, I'm so glad. Toto. I'll be coming back for you in a minute. We've got to get away. We've got to run away.
That was filmed here sometime ago. Okay, who wants to watch the end of this movie now? Okay, now when you were watching this movie, however old you were, I watched it when I was a kid and I still watch it. I've had a tough day and I want to feel good, I watch that movie. Who thought that after Dorothy went to Oz, defeated the Wicked Witch, got back to Kansas, she's going to have to show up in court because she violated a court order? This is indirect contempt. Now, it's a sheriff's order. I think that's what they call them back in Kansas at the time. I tried to research that, but apparently sheriffs could issue orders for the seizures of animals based on a complaint, and they had to be heard by a judge. But that's an order. That's a legal order. She's violated it. Guess what? Indirect contempt. So Dorothy's going to have to account for why Toto hasn't been surrendered. What are some other examples? Well, we failure to comply with a valid court order. That's Dorothy. She's off with the dog to Oz and parts unknown. Failure to appear in court. How many times have we had that happen? Every day, or every time court's held. Jurors who don't show up or file false exemption claims. We get a lot of juror no-shows. Anybody had a false exemption claim? Nobody. Okay, I've only had one since seven of the classes I've taught. Failure to appear for a show cause or other hearing. How many of those have you had? Probably scores, hundreds. You have to ask yourself, indirect contempt, you mean I can hold a hearing, put somebody in jail for violating a court order, deferred adjudication, go do 20 hours of community service, they don't do it. Yeah, well then why don't we use it? Warning, due process requires the right to assistance of counsel in contempt cases where immediate action is not required by the court. Ex parte Heister. It's there for you to read if you want. The bottom line is that if you want to start using this tool, you've got to be aware that if somebody comes in and you notice them for a hearing, they say, well, Judge, I want a lawyer and I can't afford one. You've got to give them a lawyer. Okay, do we have any clerks in this? There's all judges in here? Any clerks? Court administrator? Who's paying? Where's the money coming from? Which lawyer is it? You've got to answer those questions ahead of time. Because the court administrators and folks are going to go, well, Judge, hang on. You want to get this person a lawyer, but who do we get? So, Judge Goble, who teaches this class with me, he's gone through this process before. And what he did was, he went to see the city administrator. They talked to city council. They put a small pot of money aside. They went and got a contract with a local defense lawyer at a much reduced rate. That's what you want to do. $25, $50 an hour, whatever it is that you think it's going to take. Put a little money aside, and then you can do this. You won't have any surprises, because if you as the judge find out, I've seen this person in court more than once. They don't care about the court's order. I'm going to get their attention. It's time for a little jail time. I don't have any money. I don't have a job, and you need to give me a lawyer. Court administrator, judge, there's got to be an order assigning that lawyer, some lawyer, to be the defense attorney. And then the court administrator is going to want to know, well, how are we going to pay this person? Where's the money coming from? We all know how sensitive that money issue is. It's not impossible. I'm just saying, if you think you're going to use this tool, make plans ahead of time, have a procedure. I recommend trying to get some lawyer on tap at some reduced rate, with something manageable, where if it's going to cost 5 or 10 hours, it's not going to cost an arm and a leg, and you'll be prepared for this problem. The bottom line is, if a person shows up and says, if you told me I've disobeyed a court order, I'm here, I don't think I'm wrong, and I want a lawyer, you've got to give him one, or you're going to run afoul of Heister. I'm sorry? The judge here asked, if it's a Class C, do you have to appoint him one? The answer is no, except if you're trying to hold him in indirect contempt. In other words, we all know the rule is no. How many? We all know the rule is you're not entitled to a lawyer for a Class C case, right? Everybody knows that. However, if you've ordered a defendant to do something, hey, I've ordered you, it's deferred adjudication, I've ordered you to do community service. defensive driving. Go take the alcohol awareness course. And you've decided, this is a frequent flyer. I've had enough of this person. I'm going to hold them in indirect contempt. You've got to give them a hearing. They've got to come in or a plea. And if they want a lawyer, if you're going to hold them in indirect contempt, you've got to pay for a lawyer if they can't afford one, which means you've got to hold a little indigency hearing on top of all that. So what I'm pointing out is this tool's been around for a long time, but has anybody here used it? No. Normally what we do is we adjudicate them, right? We put it on their record, and off they go with whatever consequences they've got with their driving record or whatever's going to follow after. So it's a tool. It's there. You can use it. I just recommend you're prepared to do it if you use that tool. But in answer to your question, you are not entitled to a lawyer for any Class C misdemeanor. It's only if you are going to try and use this indirect contempt tool. Okay. Sanctions. What can we do to people who break the rules? Well, that depends on who broke them. Okay, the first category, let's look at jurors. Now, for jurors, that's on page 8. Go to that in your materials and pick up a pen, because the first thing you're going to do is you're going to cross out section 35.01. See that on the about two-thirds of the way down. It's Article 35.01. Put lines through it. At a municipal court level, you're never going to use it. We put it in there specifically so you could cross it out and know, when I'm perusing through to find out what I can do to jurors, this is not where I'm going. Okay? Where you are going is Article 45.027. That's for us, municipal courts. And it talks about jurors that don't show up, a fine not to exceed $100 for contempt. Now, you may also find it necessary to use Section 62 of the Government Code, penalty for defaulting jurors, because Article 45.027 doesn't talk about false exemption claims, right? This isn't a person who's just failed to show. They filed an exemption claim that's false. Your fallback position is Section 62.111. As I mentioned, 35.01, not using it. Our first regulation, the first part of the law we're going to use is that intended for municipal courts in Article 45. That's at the bottom of the page. And if you've got a situation where someone files a fake exemption, then you go to 62.111. Any questions about that, about jurors? Okay. Next category, minors. Okay, that's on page 9. Go to page 9. Right at the top, juveniles. Now, how many of you are finding that the most difficult people you've got now showing up are the kids? Anybody? I mean, some of them have figured out. We really can't do very much to them. The bad ones, really, have found that out. Well, you know, you can do something with my driver's license. That's something in the future. I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about getting back and playing Xbox or my next text message. So I don't care. Do what you're going to do. Some of them have figured that out. Well, you're not entirely powerless. A couple things we need to note. One thing you definitely cannot do is you cannot incarcerate a juvenile. There's a judge somewhere in the south of the valley who's someplace, I know this case is pending, put some 15-year-old in the county jail. That's just a disaster. You can't do it. Now the lawsuits are coming. It's just, you know, it's Pandora's box and it's open. Okay, so what we can do to a juvenile who we have a problem with, we really have two choices. Okay, one choice is found Section C. If you look down there, there's items 1 and 2, Article 45.050. Our two choices are there. Let's talk about number 2 first. We can retain jurisdiction of the case, hold the child in contempt, and do either or both of the following. We can order them to pay a fine, or we can tell DPS to mess with their driver's license. How many of you have done that? Pretty widespread use of that, although, from what I understand, it's the ones that just don't care anymore, they don't really care about any of that. The ones that are 15, 14 that know, you can't do anything to me, you've got another tool, and that's in number 1. You can refer the child to the appropriate juvenile court for delinquent conduct for contempt. Now, what does that mean? When you've got some juvenile in a court and the kid's just way out in left field and you've had enough, warned them, etc., what you as the judge now become is not the person finding them in contempt, but you become the witness. What you're going to do now is you're going to summarize the conduct, and you're going to order that person taken to the juvenile authorities to have somebody up there to determine whether or not they're in need of some other kind of supervision based on the conduct that occurred in your court. Now, while this is usually a pretty easy task in the cities, I know several of you are from places where, you know, it's not, the juvenile center is not big, or there's a joint juvenile center. So what should you do? Well, first of all, you probably need to plan ahead. Probably need to contact the juvenile center and find out, what is it I need to do if I've got a juvenile that I want to refer up to the juvenile courts? They've got simply more tools than we do at the municipal court level to get some of these kids' attention. But you as the judge now, you've kind of made a finding, hey, this is contemptuous conduct. But the remedy is going to be affected by the court that's above you. And they may find that the child's in need of supervision, or is a child that's committed an act of delinquent conduct, and they may be, they've got some of the assets to do that. Anybody sent a juvenile up before? Let me give an example that happened in the city of Arlington. This is from Judge Evans. Had a kid in court, gang-related ticket. There's two pages of information. And the judge gave this kid plenty of room to hang himself. Kid wouldn't stay still, tried to walk out of the court several times. Judge warned the kid, had the kid brought back, bailiff brought him back, mumbling under his breath, wouldn't answer the judge's questions. Finally, I think the last straw was the kid said, let's go, and tried to walk out a final time, and the judge said, that's it. Now, what the bailiff did was, bailiff, take him into custody, and I want him transferred to the juvenile, we call it Kimbo in Tarrant County, have the juvenile detention center, and she wrote up a two-page document summarizing the conduct. Now it's that court's job to take that and make a determination of what to do based on this conduct. We've had, how many of you are frustrated with the repeat juveniles? A couple of hands. We don't have a lot of tools at a municipal court level to deal with them. So you may want to make more use of this, but once again, for those of you who have never done it, probably a good idea, make a little liaison with the juvenile court. Find out what kind of documents they need to take them. I understand that in some places the juvenile detention center is going to say, we're full. We can't take them. Probably a good idea to know that ahead of time. One of the worst things we can do is try to affect some sanction for the kid to find out, well, not only can I do what I want, you can't do anything, but when you try to do things, you're ineffectual. So we can't allow that to happen. But these are the boundaries for juveniles. Don't exceed them. I know some judges are frustrated with, you know, I can't reach this kid. You know what? There are some of them, in my opinion, now I'm a defense lawyer and I deal with these kids a lot. There's some of them, we're not going to reach them. They're going to have their own epiphany and figure out for themselves that, you know, after they've had a few hard knocks, they'll have to come to that realization themselves. You can't fix everybody. Don't try to. You'll only get frustrated. Okay, officers of the court, which are clerks, bailiffs, police, and attorneys. They're found on page 7. Go back to page 7. And that's going to be found in 21.002D as in Delta. Now, if the person who's creating the problem is one of these individuals, a clerk, a bailiff, police officer, or attorney, that person can be found in contempt, but they cannot immediately be incarcerated. They've got to have a hearing. Unlike everyone else at the bottom. Okay? Everyone else that doesn't fit into these three categories, if you see something that's particularly bothersome, disrupts the court, disrespectful, they can go in jail right then and there and off they go. No hearing, there's no due process problems, the law is very clear on it. But for this category, clerks, bailiffs, police, and attorneys, they've got to have a hearing. They can be released on a recognizance bond, they have to make a motion to do it. Doesn't say whether it has to be oral or written. If someone's very disruptive, this is kind of an extreme case, but you could foreseeably have the bailiffs confine that person. If that person says, well, I want a bond and I want a hearing, it'd probably be a good idea to let him out and do that. Stay within the rules and you won't have any, probably won't have any difficulties. Yes, sir. 3 days per incident. Okay, the judge's question is, what happened if I have multiple comments? Well, it's one incident, And if you're going to put them in jail or you're going to quell the problem, you can actually have them taken out, removed from the court, and suspend the proceedings, and then have a hearing. What you've got is, especially when you've got an attorney, is if you've got an attorney now who's got to defend himself against or herself against a contempt hearing, you now got this situation where they're trying to defend a client. We don't want to create a situation where the client's rights, the defendant's rights, are affected by the misconduct of the attorney. Although we've had no problems with attorneys in this room, and I think we've had one other attorney problem in the several hundred judges that I've taught this class to so far. It's not unrelated, and normally there's something else we can do. Okay, how many judges here have had to get an attorney up to the bench in the mall? One, two. Did it work? It worked. Did it work? Both these judges said it worked. Counsel approached, look, counsel, I told you not to do it. Keep doing it, I'm going to hold you in contempt. As an attorney, that would get my attention. It hasn't been done to me yet, and it probably won't be, but anybody who doesn't get that word, that warning, they got a problem. So, did that answer your question? Okay. Now, if there's nothing wrong with telling an attorney, in my opinion, based on the law, that I've warned you, you've done it, I'm holding you in contempt. We're going to proceed, and we're going to talk about this contempt in you later, but if you do it again, I'm going to hold you for a second count. I don't think that's a problem. If the attorney's going to continue, or any person is going to continue with that kind of conduct, and gets warned, and gets put back in the corral and gets back out again, it's time for count two. I mean, we just can't allow people to act that way in the court. I mean, everybody will just figure out, you know, court's a joke, and we'll be like every other country where, you know, the courts don't matter. We just can't allow it. Yes, sir? I'm sorry? The judge's question was, what do you do when an attorney shows up in a T-shirt? Okay. This is another area where preventative medicine is important. How many of you publish to both the defendants and the attorneys the rules, the dress code, and the rest of that stuff? Not a lot of hands, okay? The smart money, in my opinion, is when your court notice gets out, most of them are promulgated by some kind of computer, put some guidance in there. Attorneys shall be properly attired in. Defendants are not permitted to wear X. These things are not allowed. Then there's no question about what goes on. Or put a sign in front. If an attorney shows up in a T-shirt, I think you have every right to tell the attorney, look, that's not appropriate attire for an attorney. We're going to reset this case if you can get your... Whatever. I mean, I have to watch it. After all these years in the Marine Corps, there's a lot of language I can't use here that we use then. There's a couple of attorneys where I practice. They routinely walk into court with jeans and I don't know. That's nobody says anything to them. Although if they go and show up for trial, they're always in a suit. I don't know. The T-shirt thing. I have a problem with the T-shirt thing. I've had my clients show up to court, and one of them had a big marijuana leaf on the back of his shirt, getting ready to go plead on a possession of marijuana case. If the judge had seen that guy was going to jail. I told him, you go in the bathroom and you change shirts with your brother. And come back in here with something else on. DWI, this bud's for you. And standing, you know, what are we telling the judge? We're telling the judge, you know, you got me here and you're going to do something to me, but, it's the middle finger. So I don't think there's any problem with saying, look, pal, I don't like the message you're sending here. You can come back and get something on. I know some judges have a rule, no T-shirts with writing at all. You know, you're on safe ground then. So, recommendation, put the guidance out ahead of time. Let people know what the rules are so you don't have those kinds of problems. Okay. So we talked about everybody else. And I hope that answers your question about the lawyer with the T-shirt. Yes? I mean, you know, if somebody shows up with a T-shirt that says, you know, something really foul, walked into court, you could put him in jail for 3 days. I don't think anybody would pitch you out on it. Either one. Well, the attorney, you're going to have to do something different. Court officer, defendant, different. Let's talk about this one. Okay, so the defendant's up talking to the judge, blah, 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 defendant doesn't get what he wants. Turns around, leaves a bunch of people, and goes like this. Judge doesn't see it. Everybody starts laughing. Bailiff sees it. Direct contempt? Right to jail. Out. I'm not going to put up with that nonsense. You know. And I thought I was going to get justice here. Well, justice doesn't mean you get everything you want. If you don't like it, you have to leave like a regular person and not be a jerk. Or else you go to jail. Oh, yeah, we're going to get to that in just a second. Okay. We talked about any questions about what we can do to who and where we find it. Yes. Nope. We're going to talk about the procedures and the paperwork right after this. But the judge's question was, hey, do I have to throw him in jail? No. You could warn somebody, hey, you're getting out of line. I'm going to fine you $100 right now, and if you do something more, I'll put you in jail. Yes, sir. Question? I'm sorry, say it again. Okay, judge's question was, and a frequent problem, big sign in front of the court, turn your cell phones off. Lawyers, whoever, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, it goes off. $100 fine, $100 fine, $100 fine. That's appropriate as direct contempt. However, if you're going to impose a sanction on a lawyer or a court officer or a bailiff, you can't impose it directly. You've got to do something different. They have to have a hearing. Everybody else, you can whack for the $100 or take their cell phone or whatever you're going to do. But that's perfectly appropriate, but you've got to be careful about which person, which group of people you're talking about is committing the transgression. Judge's question is, lawyer's cell phone went off. I want to take a cell phone and keep it till the end of the day, right? Well, did you find him in contempt? Okay, well, I mean, look, you found the person in contempt. They did something you don't like. That's contempt. Now you're going to impose a sanction, okay? If you're going to impose a sanction, you've got to follow the procedures. So if you're going to take a cell phone from somebody and give it back at the end of the day, well, first of all, that isn't even in the sanctions. It's a fine or jail. What's that you're doing? It's not in the law. Now, if you ask me which I'd rather have, you're going to take my cell phone for half a day or fine me $100, well, I'll come back and get the cell phone. Heck, take the cell phone. I'm sick of talking to people anyway. You do me a favor. Heck, I might let it go off next time so the judge can take it. Okay, applying the sanction. Procedures. Everyone except the court, officers, and juveniles requires an order, which should be done immediately, but not later than 24 hours. Now, the documents are in your materials, and I don't remember which page it's in, but there's an order. Matter of fact, there's orders for everything in here. They're on the TMCC website. They're in the TMCC judge's book. There's a form. It's an order. Order for direct contempt. It's on this date. I found this person in contempt, and this is why. Their phone went off. I fined him $100. They told me to go. I asked the defendant how he pled. He told me he didn't give a poop about what I thought, and I could go F myself. Whatever it is, I found him in contempt. I put him in jail for 3 days. You spell it out, and either fine him, or off they go. But there has to be an order. Well, I mean, the sheriff is going to want some authority to hold the person, correct? I mean, you've got to have a written order to do that. Now, officers of the court, there are special procedures for that. Those are our bailiffs. Well, what do you have to do? Well, you have to notice them through a hearing. There's got to be a hearing date set. And they come back, and there's a hearing to find whether you're going to impose a sanction or not. Juveniles, there's some tension between the Code of Criminal Procedure and the government code, but for juveniles, once again, the forms are all in your materials. If you've got a juvenile and you're going to impose the sanctions under Section 2, which is fine and driver's license problems, the form is there. It's fairly self-explanatory. If you're going to refer them up, you've got to prepare an order ordering them to be confined and taken, and you've got to fill out all the information so that the court that gets this kid, okay, why do we have this kid? We got this kid because the judge said they committed contempt in their court. Well, what facts do we have? Do we want to err on the side of less information or more information? We want to do more. And for those of you who have are taking courts of record, if you're recording those proceedings. I know some judges now who are recording all juvenile proceedings because the juveniles are a problem. Other things I want to discuss briefly while we're talking about juveniles. There are a lot of intermediate things we can do with juveniles to get their attention. One of the judges from Southlake, they got a lot of kids up there. It's a very affluent community, and he tells me that, in his opinion, the more affluent the community, the worse the kids are. The parents are enablers, whatever it is. They get in, the parents are almost as bad as the kids. What he does is, when he's got juvenile court, if the first kid comes up and gives him a hard time, he just tells the bailiff, I want you to take him over to the jury room, and we'll deal with him last. Now, is that confinement? Probably not. Is there anything in the law that says you can't be done? No. Is there a message that gets sent to the other kids? Uh-oh. No. I better watch my P's and Q's or I'll be here all day. What do kids hate to do? They hate to wait. They hate to wait. I don't like to wait. They hate it even worse. But if you let them know, you're going to wait, I'm going to deal with you last, then that's one way to control the crowd, because we all know from doing either magistration or court, if the first person says three or four magic words and gets what they want, almost immediately, if everybody else can hear, what are they going to say? The three magic words, because I want what he got. What words do I have to say? So, got to corral them early on, or you're going to have a problem. Okay, applying the sanction. Next, it's very difficult to see here. It says up here, the judgment of direct contempt. We talked about it just a second ago. That form's in there. But right here, it's the person's name. And then on this date, the court exercises power. The court finds Johnny Wishbone in contempt, and these are the reasons. And this is what I'm going to do, confine him or fine him, signed by the judge. Now, yeah. You killed me there. I was going to that next. Because court administrators, wait a minute. What case number is this? Well, if it's a defendant's case, we could tie it to the defendant's case number. What if it's a witness? What if it's a parent? What if it's somebody not there on a case? Lawyer. Got to create a case number. There's no magic to it. It's simply a matter of going back to the court administrators and say, hey, we need to have a bank of case numbers to assign to these problems. So if the courts, if the defendant's in there on case number 123456, maybe you call this 123456C for contempt. If there's no ticket number, you've probably got to have something fixed ahead of time to assign a case number. Oh, no, it's a separate deal entirely. Sure. I think so. I don't think anything's going to fall. I don't think our judicial system is going to fall apart because somebody didn't like the case number, the way you number. I'm just saying it's. I think it's wise to ahead of time decide what we're going to do and what case number we're going to assign it, because we all know that clerks and court administrators, they're not going to be comfortable with it. This is blank. That ain't going to happen. That's not happening. Cause number blank, not happening. So, yeah, I'm just saying there's no hard and fast rule that I know of for assigning case numbers. Just have a plan ahead of time so you know how to find it. Okay, indirect contempt, which is stuff happening outside the court, or it doesn't require immediate action. For everyone except jurors, you have to have a show cause order, a plea form, and a judgment, whatever the judgment's going to be. Show cause order is, you were told to do X, you didn't do it. Now you need to come here and tell us and show cause why I shouldn't hold you in contempt for failing to obey the court's order. There's a plea form. So you're not guilty. And there's a judgment. Or, you know, I find contempt wasn't found. Remember, on this procedure for everybody else, what happens if they need a lawyer? Who's got to pay if they can't pay? You do. Remember, that's got to be done. So if they come in, you issue a show cause order, and they come in to sign their plea, well, judge, I plead not guilty. I want a lawyer. I don't have any money. You're on the hook for the lawyer. And then the judgment form. All those forms are in your materials. Now, jurors. Jurors need a complaint. The complaint is you didn't show. There has to be a charging instrument. You were told to show. You failed to do it. There's going to have to be a show cause order and then a hearing and a judgment. But with folks that are jurors, you have to allege you either didn't show or you filed a false exemption claim. We found out you need to come to court to show why I shouldn't find you in contempt for that activity. Okay, we've defined it. We've classified it as direct or indirect. We've talked about the sanctions and where to find those, and we talked about the paper trail, the procedures to implement the sanctions. Something else to think about. A judge shall be patient, dignified, and courteous to litigants, jurors, witnesses, lawyers, and others. I don't know what others means. I guess anybody else. With whom the judge deals with in official capacity. We have obligations set out in the government code. We don't have a lot of people being found in contempt because, thankfully, we still have in this country respect for the courts. I think people realize they've got to watch their P's and Q's. Well, how many of you have been told by, they talk to the clerks one way and not to the judges? They pretty much know what's going on. It's time to get serious. Fortunately for you clerks and court administrators, being a jerk to the court clerk is not a attack of contempt. I know you'd like it to be, because you probably get it far more than the judges do, but it's not contempt. Anyway, remember this. I think that's we don't seem to have an out-of-control problem with judges using this as a tool. It's a last resort.
Hands I have to witness punishment.
Duty. You know why I'm having Hummel flogged, Mr. Gerard?
I reported him for fighting, sir.
I'm not having him flogged for fighting, Mr. Gerard. I'm having him flogged because you said in front of the men that you'd flog him. This is a ship of war. As its captain, I must uphold my lieutenant's authority.
I understand, sir.
Flogging only makes a bad man worse, Mr. Gerard. But it can break a good man's spirit. Is Hummel a bad man?
Aside from his temper, sir, he's a good sailor.
A good sailor. Ill-fed and thirsty. Watch the cat as it cuts his back to pieces, Mr. Gerard. And in future, perhaps you'll think twice before you threaten anyone with a flogging. Dismiss the hands.
Dismiss the hands.
Hands dismiss!
For most people, their only experience with the court system is going to be one of our courts. When you decide to put somebody in jail for contempt, and we've talked about the tools and how to use them. When you decide to put somebody in jail for direct contempt, and it's Johnny Wishbone, Johnny Sailor, it's done. And most of those people can't go get a habeas writ. And the chances are that most of those people probably aren't bad people, but you know how they get. They're frustrated. They're mad. They got, for whatever reason, the cop gave me a ticket and deserved it. The best way to control that is to let people know what's expected of them ahead of time. You know, sometimes we have to keep people from some of their own worst decisions. And maybe a few words or some guidance ahead of time keeps somebody from getting in this situation. Because once they go in, their opinion of the judicial system is not going to be any better when they get out, probably. Oh, you'll punish them all right. But, you know, as a last resort. Because like a captain of a ship, the judge is in charge. When the judge says something, that's got to go. It has to happen. So use it wisely. Use it correctly. We have any questions? If not, I think we're out of time.
And they're off.
You're gone. Oh yeah, I'm a part timer. I'm the 2 o'clock in the morning guy. I never go to court. I don't even know what the court looks like. Yeah. And I never go. I live a mile from the Irving Jail, and I am the 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning guy, EPO guy, the no-refusal weekend guy. I don't even know what the inside, I know what it looks like, but I don't ever do anything there. Yep. No. If you're talking about finding him in direct contempt, my advice gets it right there. Stand by. I got something for you to do. That part of the thing is, this isn't any different from anybody else who shows up. I got to take care of my tickets. Well, it's for him. I don't have any money. Yeah. I've seen that. I've seen judges do that. Look, who wants putting people? Jerks going to go to jail, okay? But what we want? We want the money. So you give them a little lead line to go get the money. I don't see any problem with giving them time to pay it. But I've never seen this as kind of a yelling thing. I've always seen it like I was in the Marine Corps for a long time. We got our own way of solving problems. I never felt it necessary. It's like, look, what the fuck are you doing? I'm going to have you take him behind the maintenance shack to kick the shit out of you. Why won't you follow the rules? You joined the Marine Corps. Most of the time with people, look, pal, you're in court. You can't do that. I'm not recording anymore.